I was just thinking of something even just as simple as like when you're driving and you really don't want to hit a red light. It's like, don't want to hit a red light. Don't want to hit a red light. Instead of saying, I don't want to hit a red light, you're going to say, I want to hit green lights. I'm going to hit green lights. It's all green, 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 green. So yes. Talking about what you don't want, the word don't, like Emma said, it's just like, it ain't there. So it's, I want to hit red lights. I want them. Send them to me. Instead of focusing on the positive, it's the word affirmation obviously has a lot more depth to it than just affirming, but switching the dynamic of saying I don't want things and just looking at the opposite of it and then affirming that.
Hello, my friends, and welcome back to Real with the Podcast. This is your host, Emma.
And your co-host, Elizabeth. And welcome to week two of the Real with Method.
I am so excited to dive into this week. It's a little bit of a heavier week compared to last week, week one, where we were talking about clarity and tapping into your why and really trying to reinforce that you're worth the work. Whereas this week, we're getting into the nitty-gritty. We're talking about the science. And the reason that this is coming in week two is because this is going to build the foundation necessary so that we can move on to week three, where we talk about self-worth. We talk about healing, micro healing versus macro healing. We talk about the shadow work and intuition. You have to have this understanding. You have to have a little bit of the science in order to be able to get to that step. And then in further weeks where we really dive into manifestation and rituals and routines, it's very helpful to have something concrete underneath all of the more woo-woo spiritual things that we're going to be talking about. And so I'm very excited to dive in. Elizabeth, I actually asked her before we started recording, I was like, I'm going to be talking so much science that I'm asking her to like pull me up for air when needed and, you know, bring some lightheartedness to this conversation. And I'm not trying to scare or intimidate you guys because I'm obsessed with the science, but it can get a little heady and you have to be careful not to take any of this so literally. So I just want to like preface, take this all with a grain of salt. This really is here to A, give you what it is that you need to know, but also B, to give you that sense of like, oh, okay. So it's not all just butterflies and rainbows and, you know, manifestation and woo-woo. Like there is science grounding us into this information.
And it's going to take a little bit too. I'm even still wrapping my head around it years into the process. So take the information as you can and digest it as you can. Obviously, come back and listen to this again if you feel like you need to. But the alignment guidebook is going to be a huge resource for you to be able to integrate the information that you're learning today and really put it into practice in your life. And I personally am going to be leaning on that a lot because, like Emma said, it is very science heavy. And I love the facts. I'm a facts and, you know, school girly, but it can be a little bit overwhelming with all of this. So we're going to give you the tools and resources to really make it make sense.
Yes. So I'll give a little rundown of what we're going to discuss today, just so that you guys can get a taste. You can buckle up and prepare yourselves. And then we're going to dive right in. Hopefully this week, this episode won't be as lengthy as last week. We had a lot to cover last week, but we're going to get into it. We're going to get right down to it. So today we're going to be talking about the law of attraction, but more specifically, we're going to be talking about the power of thought. What is that? What does it mean? And how does it influence the life that we live and the reality that we are all experiencing uniquely and individually, but also collectively? We're going to be talking a little bit about self-worth and our authentic selves and what happens when we're children, how we receive information. We're going to be talking about the brain, the unconscious mind, the subconscious mind, and how we can begin to reprogram that so that we can live the life that we want to live. The last thing that we're going to be talking about today is, again, the importance of mindfulness, of being aware, because, again, you can't change what you don't know, and how mindfulness is really the key to doing this inner work. Mindfulness was week one because we're going to talk about it over and over and over and over again. It is the cornerstone of the healing work and the healing journey. You have to be willing to meet yourself where you're at, and you have to be willing to drop in and face what it is that you're experiencing in order to alchemize it, to heal it, to shift it, and to change it. So with that being said, let's go ahead and dive right in. Starting off hot, we're going to talk about the law of attraction. Now, the law of attraction has many different, I almost want to say taglines, like different things that you hear to help really drive home the message of the law of attraction. But it basically states that like attracts like, and that what we are thinking is what we are creating. So if we are thinking primarily negative thoughts, we will have negative situations, people, feelings attracted back to us. And then on the flip side, if we're thinking primarily positive thoughts, we're going to attract positive situations, people, and feelings into our life. The law of attraction is basically saying that our subconscious mind is what's creating our reality. And so here are some of those taglines that maybe you guys have heard before. Energy flows where attention goes. What we think about is what we bring about. You have to believe it to receive it. And then one that I wanted to throw in, this isn't necessarily under the law of attraction or maybe what we've seen talked about when people discuss the law of attraction, but I don't even know who said this. I just have it written down in my notes. It says, whether you think you can or you can't, you're right.
Ooh, wow.
That's the law of attraction, right? It's basically this understanding of whatever you're saying, whatever you're telling yourself, whatever you're thinking is what you are going to experience in your life.
So I want you to provide a little bit of context because I think this is something that even I get tripped up on. If you have a negative thought, like if you start off this thought spiral and you start off with a negative thought, does that kind of doom you, or how can we dig ourselves out of that?
This is something we're going to get to as we move forward through this call, but that's such a good question. And I think this is where so many people like learn the science, they'll learn about the law of attraction. Or for example, I wanted to talk about this anyways, they'll watch the movie, The Secret, or they'll read the book, The Secret, which if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend going to watch it because what I appreciate about that book, that movie, is that it's very science-based. It's talking about the quantum field. It's talking about quantum physics, but it does make it feel so literal. It makes it feel like if you think a thought like, oh no, I'm going to die in a car accident today, that you're going to die in a car accident. You know what I'm saying? It makes it a little too literal when there are so many other factors at play. And what we're going to be talking about in the Real With Method is the difference between the law of attraction and manifestation, because they are different. And so to answer your question, no, there isn't this immediate turnaround rate where if you think a thought, all of a sudden it becomes your truth. Because negative thoughts, we're going to get into this, negative thoughts carry a very low vibration. They don't have a very strong output. So you can think negative thoughts a lot and it's going to make you feel negative, and eventually it will lead to experiencing negative things. But positive thoughts are, I think they say, like 100 times more powerful than a negative thought. So saying, I believe that today is going to be a good day, is 100 times more powerful or magnetic, I guess you could say, than saying today is a shit day.
Mm. The movie The Secret, I also want to clarify, there's two, because they came out with a more recent one with like Katie Holmes and actors. The one that Emma is talking about is from what, like 2007?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like a little bit dated, but I think that it has a lot of quality information. But this episode, I mean, I'm excited to hear how you expand on it, because that movie really kind of gives you like a taste, but there's so much more to it that I know that we need to discover.
Right. So the movie The Secret that Elizabeth's talking about, definitely they added a new one on Netflix that's like a movie. Whereas the other one's more documentary style, they're interviewing quantum physicists and philosophers and people who have been studying the law of attraction for years. Mm-hmm. And they interview people who have learned about the law of attraction and implemented certain, you know, practices into their life, and they began manifesting really amazing things. So it's definitely something that gives you this motivation to be like, I'm going to set goals. I want to manifest. I want to, you know, create my dream life. And it has to start with, what am I thinking and what am I believing? So we're going to talk way more about the difference between the law of attraction and manifestation as we move forward. There's actually going to be an entire week of the Real With Method that we're talking about manifestation and all the different moving parts and everything that goes into actually manifesting the life that you desire. Because the truth of it is, we're constantly manifesting. We're manifesting every single minute of every single moment of every single day. And so in order to create the shifts that we want, it really does come down to these micro moments, because there's this understanding of, okay, so we think a thought that sparks an emotion that makes us want to take an action. Those actions become habits. Those habits become routines. Those routines become our day. And then that's, boom, there's our life. So we start small. We start with our brain and with what we're thinking. So I'll share another quote that I really love. This is from Marianne Williamson. I'm pretty sure it's from the book A Return to Love, which is also a very powerful tool if you are on this journey of understanding how deeply fear has been rooted in so many of us. And if you're looking to begin a healing journey, I think for a lot of us, the manifesting journey kind of sends us down the healing path. Like you're like, oh my God, manifestation, the law of attraction, this is so cool. If I just believe that I'll be successful, I will be. But then you start to realize how many roadblocks are in the way and how maybe hard it is to believe in yourself. Or you start to notice all of these triggers or these self-limiting beliefs around your worth or how valuable you feel, or you know, all of those. And you end up getting pivoted down this path of like self-development and shadow work and inner child healing and worthiness. So I don't know if you guys are picking up what I'm putting down, but that's what the Real With Method was made for. It's like, let's take you down the journey. You want to manifest your dream life? Cool. This is the path that's going to take you there.
And it's not just very simple, like that pipeline I think so many people have slipped down. There are so many different things that come up, and I'm really excited to dive into the future episodes of the Real With Method, because that's when we're going to be unpacking shadow work, inner child, intuition, and things like that, which go hand in hand so closely with this. And I'm just really excited.
Yeah. So, okay, getting back to that quote that I wanted to say from Marianne Williamson. She's amazing. She says, our internal state determines our experiences in life. Our experiences do not determine our internal state. So I don't know if anything like comes to mind when I say that, Elizabeth, like if any example in your own life reinforces that.
I feel like when I'm in a situation where this, I think, also goes back to kind of self-perception. Like if I'm thinking that everyone around me is like thinking I'm annoying or talking too much, then that's the created experience that I begin to live. Whereas everyone around me might be like, wow, she like has so much to say. She's so magnetic. She's so vibrant. Like they could be loving it, but I begin to have a negative experience of it because my internal state then determined my external state.
Mm-hmm.
And that just creates this really, really terrible kind of trap. Whereas no matter what situation I could be in, no matter what people are saying to me, if I determine and I say to myself, like, I am at peace, I am safe to speak my truth, I am safe to be received, then my internal state can stay the same no matter what people are saying to me.
Yeah, that's such a great example. And I think for me, it's very similar of like what it sparks in me. What is it making me reflect on?
Yeah.
I have, so many of us do, but I have a very powerful energy to me. And if that energy is going towards believing something negative is going to happen, like it's going to come true. So I think about how many times I have convinced myself or allowed myself to believe that going to this party is going to be an awful time. Like, I'm not going to have fun. None of my friends are going to be there. I'm going to be alone. I don't get along with any of the girls. I'm thinking about like my younger 20 self. I would get myself all riled up being like, I'm not going to have a good time, blah, 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 blah. And I would project that onto the experience. And then what would happen is I would show up and I would get exactly that. I wouldn't really vibe with the people. I would be like, why the fuck am I here? I shouldn't have come. You know, I should have listened to myself. This isn't a good time. And when I began down this path of healing and I like learned about the law of attraction, and I learned about the power of thought, I began to project into these experiences positive things. Like,
I'm
not being like, this is going to be the best day ever. But I mean, I'm sure you guys see that one of my favorite affirmations is so simple. And I say it every day. Today is a good day. Like the simplest thing you can say to yourself upon waking. Today is a good day. Mm-hmm. But more so, I'll invite things into my experience. So I'll be like, I'm open to experiencing deep connection at this party. I'm open to finding joy in unexpected places at this party. And when I do that, when my internal state is one of openness and receptiveness, I will walk into any situation and I will receive that. I'll be pleasantly surprised more often than not at how much joy and peace I find when I'm setting the tone first.
Another experience very similar to what you just said just popped into my mind, and I think we can all relate. Think about like a stressful experience or just like a bleh experience, like going to the DMV or something just super low vibe like that, where you're like, people are stressed, people are anxious, like going through TSA.
Yeah.
Something like that, where I set the intention before I got my license last year, my new Florida license. I was like, I could go into this and be like, everyone's going to suck. Everyone's going to be stressed. People are going to be awful. This is going to take forever. But I was like, this is going to be a smooth experience. Everyone's going to treat me with kindness. I'm going to make a friend. It's going to be beautiful. And the woman that helped me was so sweet. Everyone around was just like positive. The line went quickly. Mm-hmm. Like everything actually unfolded with ease. And I left there being like, wow, that was literally the best experience that I've had doing this, because I set that intention and I was not allowing myself to be shook by anything else going around.
I'm really glad that you brought that up, because one of the things inside the Real With Project that I challenged my clients to do, and will now include this in the Real With Method Alignment Guide, is to challenge yourself in those difficult situations to create the best possible outcome simply by setting an intention and staying open and connected to that intention. And so I have a client who has turned into one of my dear, dear friends. Her name is JC. She's actually also my hairstylist. She has a long distance boyfriend. He was living in California. So she was like flying a lot. Thinking about flying from like Boston to California, that like I'm sitting here being like, I feel anxiety. Like I feel stressed. I'm not even the one traveling. Like I get very stressed when I travel. But she's like, Emma, you taught me that I can create a very beautiful and easeful travel experience just through my intentions, through my energy, through my thoughts, through my beliefs. And she's like, I have manifested some of the most easy travel days ever. She did the same thing where like she went to, I think, Mexico with one of her best friends. She was like, you wouldn't even believe how easy and seamless everything was, because I was just repeating to myself, like, everything is happening for my highest good. My day unfolds with ease and grace. She was like saying all these affirmations. And I think she even maybe woke up the morning of her flight or the night before her flight and like scripted out, like wrote in her journal, I am so happy and grateful that my travel blank, 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 and started listing off all the things that she wanted to experience. And so it does go to show where our, you know, energy is going and where our attention is going gets magnified. What we believe is what we receive. Whether you think you can or you can't, you're right.
True.
That's we'll circle back to that one, because I just love it so much. But I want to start diving into more of what I was talking about at the start of this, more of the nitty gritty. We're going to dive into a little bit more of the science again, because I know for a fact that so many people value concrete evidence more than they take someone's testimony. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you can scroll on socials and you can see someone be like, I manifested this amazing thing into my life and here's how. And they're like, oh, I journaled and like I visualized it. And you're going to be like, okay, cool, great. But like, how did that happen? Why did it work? And I myself love asking the question, why? It's very Sagittarius of me. We are the explorers of the zodiac. We want to know why. Why? Why this? Why that? And also my sister, you and that Virgo energy, anyone who has like heavy earth signs, you're probably like, yeah, I would actually like some of the science. I would actually like that. That would actually probably support me in believing this and adopting this as a lifestyle. So let's get into it. The reason that I want to emphasize the power of thought on this call or on this episode is because we have roughly 60,000 thoughts a day. That's a lot of thoughts that are firing in and out of our brain. And we are not conscious or aware of, I would say, I don't know, what would you say? I'm like, I don't know how many I'm sitting with and how many I'm aware of. Maybe 20%.
Yeah, they just pop off out of nowhere sometimes. I'm like, damn.
And I'm a mindful person, you know, like, yeah. And I make a concerted effort to be aware of what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So out of those 60,000 thoughts that we're thinking a day, 90% of those we also thought yesterday and the day before and the day before. And the reason that is because of something called neural networks in our brain. Now, without getting too sciencey, I want to give you this analogy that me and Elizabeth have both heard and we love. It's this idea that the brain could be like a mountain covered with snow. And when you think a thought, it's like pushing a sled down the hill. That sled is going to create grooves and a path in that snow. And so every thought you think, every different thought is going to have a different path. But think about it this way. The more that you think a thought, the more that you're sending a sled down one path, the more deeply embedded those grooves become. And then after a while in your brain, you could just like kick a sled and it's probably going to fall into a groove. It's going to fall into a pathway that has the deepest grooves and is like most deeply embedded. All of that to say, the reason why we think so many of the same thoughts day after day is because those neural networks are the deepest. It's because those are the thoughts that we think the most.
I also heard from Joe Dispenza on a recent podcast he was on. I think it was Diary of a CEO. This guy was talking about his morning routines. And I think we've talked about this in the past, but he was like, I continue to snooze my alarm. I continue to lay around. I continue to miss out on these key parts of my morning routine. And I feel so guilty about it. Why do I keep doing it? And Joe Dispenza was like, you are addicted to the guilt. So people who are overweight, people who can't stop snacking at night, people who want to give up dessert, people who can't stop snoozing, it's you're addicted to the guilt that happens when you don't do the thing. And so you end up continuing to not do the thing so that your body can get another hit of that guilt. And it might not even be something that you want to continue to feel guilt, shame, fear, judgment. We continue to create scenarios and experiences for ourselves that fall under those categories because we can become addicted to feelings. And that shook me because I was like, oh my God, how many addicted feelings am I creating in my life right now?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Actually, I've heard so many people talk about that episode with Joe Dispenza. So I feel like I should go listen to it. But kind of running along the same path as what we're talking about with these neural networks, I want to almost give you this idea of our brain being like a computer without any data when we are born. It is just empty. Or for anyone who is like, computer, what? Like, what is a computer? Think of an iPhone. You get a fresh iPhone, fresh out the box. There are no applications. There are no contacts. There are no photos. There's nothing. It's completely empty. So that is basically our brain when we are born into this world. It's completely empty. Now, on like a soul level, I'm like, we come into this world with like baggage from past lives, but that's completely different. I really enjoy thinking of the brain as this like masculine part of ourselves. The brain is logical. It's trying to collect evidence and data to support beliefs, to make decisions. And the brain's number one goal is to keep us safe. That is how the brain has evolved, is for survival and for safety. And so with this idea that the brain is like a machine, it's like a computer, it's like an iPhone with nothing in it, when we are born, in order to become functioning humans, we have to start inputting data. And that happens organically, of course, just by living your life. But those first 7 years that we're alive, we are living primarily in like lower brain state waves, like theta, delta, alpha. We're like going in and out of all these different brain states. But all of those are related to like trance and hypnosis, right? That those are the brain states that we are trying to enter to reprogram the subconscious mind so we can access that subconscious and unconscious mind, because that's where we're storing all of that data. That's where we're storing all of our primary belief systems and whatnot. So again, going back to this analogy of the brain being a computer with no data, the first 7 years we are just inputting based on our environment. We are taking everything in. But the thing with our subconscious mind and with that unconscious state is we perceive everything globally, but also timelessly. So that means that as a little kid, maybe you're 4 years old, you believe that if this happens now, it will happen forever and always. That is the way that the brain works. That is just, unfortunately, part of our like genetic makeup. And so as kids, we're operating primarily from that subconscious and unconscious state. But when we're absorbing all of this information, when we're storing all of this information, like this is what it means to be loved. This is what it means to be a daughter. This is what it means to be a sister. This is what it means to be a girl in the world. We're like taking in all this information. We're not doing that with any sort of discernment or assessment because our prefrontal cortex is not active. Our prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for rational thought, analytical thinking, discernment, and decision making, does not fully develop until we're 25 years old.
Oh my God. I've arrived then.
You've arrived. You can actually now make rational decisions for yourself.
I'm fully formed. It's so crazy to think about because as a teacher, as an elementary school teacher, there are so many people in my profession that have no idea how impressionable these students are. Obviously, we all know that students are there to learn, but they're not just there to learn the curriculum. They're there to learn how to human, how to behave, how to process their emotions, how to handle themselves and their manners and their peers and things like that. So think about how often we were told to sit down, be quiet. If you're having an emotional outburst, go to the principal's office. You're in trouble. Keep your hands to yourself. Don't play. Like all of those things, I can remember specific instances when I was in elementary school, if I was feeling really big feelings, there was no space for that. There was no ability for those feelings to be held or processed or loved. And so I was just like, all right, well, I guess these are super inconvenient for everybody. So especially those feelings of sadness or despair, hopelessness, things like that, or fear, those didn't have a space to be expressed. So I struggle to express those as an adult because I'm like, it's that timelessness, that generalization that we have as a child. So I think that that's a huge, I mean, we'll get into inner child. I know that that's its own whole thing, but that has been such a key piece of even healing my own inner child because I'm thinking back to all of those experiences and really reclaiming that autonomy and that ability to express.
Yeah. Just to reiterate and kind of give another example of this idea that our subconscious mind interprets things globally and timelessly. For example, like Elizabeth was saying, if at any point when you were growing up, you were rejected by one of your parents when you showed a certain emotion, or you declare that there was a certain need that you needed to be met, what we do is not only do we interpret it so personally, like this is happening because of me, this is my fault, there must be something wrong with me, but then we globalize it, meaning if my parents rejected me when I expressed this, then everyone will reject me when I express this. And then we make it timeless, we make it forever. Like it becomes this core belief within us. And how we begin to take action from that looks different based on everyone. And that kind of, this is why I love like astrology and human design. So for example, if Elizabeth as a young kid was like, wow, when I'm really big and loud, people don't like it, I'm going to stay small. She might like become an introvert and like not be super expressive. Whereas someone like me, I always got negative feedback when I was being crazy. Mm-hmm. It didn't make me stop being crazy, but it just created this belief system of like, because I am crazy, people don't like me. Because I am crazy, that means I'm a bad kid. And for me, I would say the belief system, and I have to say, you guys, actually, before I continue, that these beliefs that we create, they're all created for our safety. So our brain creates these foundational beliefs and perspectives and attitudes about ourselves and the world and others. And it creates these dynamics of like, what do we have to do and who do we have to be to stay safe and to have our needs met? So it's all evolutionary. It's all based on survival. It's all based on safety. But these beliefs, they're stored in the subconscious, aka they're hidden from our conscious awareness. So until maybe you go through a spiritual awakening or you're listening to this episode or you're doing this work where you're like, oh my God, holy shit, I have all of these beliefs inside of me that are keeping me small or stuck in fear or feeling unworthy or feeling triggered around certain things, you don't have a conscious awareness of like, oh, it's just because I think this, or it's just because I believe this. Until you kind of have that like awakening moment, all of this is unconscious. I didn't know any of this existed or that I felt this way at all until I had my spiritual awakening.
It was all just automatic. Like we were just continuing to run on those loops.
We were living on autopilot, which is the world that we were born into, right? We weren't taught to be conscious. We weren't taught to be aware. We weren't taught to be mindful. We were taught to fall in line and follow the rules, and that's how we stayed safe. And we can't even really blame our parents' generation or our grandparents' generation because they weren't being given this information either. And I think, I don't know exactly the timeline, but I'm pretty sure that like humanity in general goes through cycles, like 20 to 25,000 year cycles of like falling asleep, aka living in autopilot, living in fear, and then like consciously waking up. And so I've talked about this on my platform before. We have entered the age of Aquarius, and this is what's being called as the Great Awakening, is so many people are waking up to this knowledge and taking action to change their own internal state. Therefore, the collective frequency is rising as well, which is super fucking cool.
And another thing to note too is how important or how heavy of an influence media and society has on us as children. Like think about the shows that we watched growing up or the media that our parents were taking in, the standards that were set for them, the rules that they had to abide by. And so many rules and standards have shifted and, you know, become more accommodating as we've grown up and as our kids are then going to come into this world. But it's so important to take a really hard look at those beliefs that you adopted. Like when we were talking about, what's that magazine? Tiger Beat or whatever? Mm-hmm. 17 magazine.
17 and we were magazine.
Just like, yeah. And we were just like, okay, well, this is what it takes to get a boy to have a crush on you. This is what it takes to be likable or to be lovable and beautiful. So I will be that, or, you know, on an anatomical, biological level, like I'm going to get kicked out of the pack and sent into the wild to die. It's like, that's it.
Yep. And so what ends up happening and kind of what I was getting at is we end up developing these beliefs that by the age of 25, when our prefrontal cortex has fully developed and we're like trying to step into our full sense of self, we're like, why is there so much separation? And we end up realizing, well, if you're doing work the way that we are doing work, you end up realizing that most of the beliefs that we created as children go completely against the goals that we're setting for ourselves as adults. Like they are not supportive at fucking all. And so the belief that I have, the most limiting beliefs of all my beliefs, is that I'm a bad person. Like I'm a bad kid. I'm a bad girl. I'm the naughty girl. I'm like the devil kid. And that belief was initially most likely given to me through mom and dad. No love lost for my parents. Like I kind of was, you know, like I was mischievous and I misbehaved and I would lie and I would steal and I would sneak out and I would like do crazy shit. Like
Emma would scale the cabinets to get mom's like peanut butter protein bars from the top shelf.
The lemon.
Lemon.
Lemon Luna Bar.
Those slap.
The Lemon Luna Bar. I would steal mom's bars.
Yeah.
I would never get so mad.
That's
so
funny. So
that belief of I'm a bad kid probably developed at home, but then that was reinforced everywhere I went, probably because it became a primary belief at a young age. So at school, I had teachers yelling at me, or I would get in trouble at school, or I would get yelled at, like reprimanded by my friend's parents, or my soccer coach wouldn't like me. You know what I'm saying? So I began to live life through this lens of I am bad. And so thinking about it this way, from a young age, I began to attract things into my life that reinforced that core wounded belief.
On the opposite end of the spectrum, I want to say this for the people pleasers like me, like I always had this belief that I was like the angel emoji, good girl. Like I could only do good things. I was so innocent, so pure. And so I would literally contort myself like a fucking acrobat to make sure that I don't do anything wrong. Nothing is out of place. Nothing is imperfect. Everything is fully thought out. Everything is a fully formed action before I ever dare take a step towards it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is similarly debilitating, but on the complete opposite end of the wave.
No, that I'm so glad that you said that, because one of the reasons why, first of all, one of the reasons why Elizabeth is now the official co-host of this podcast is to provide that contrast in the duality. I have a unique experience, right? Because it's mine, but it's also very similar to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But there are people who don't relate. They're like, I don't relate to feeling like a bad person. I don't relate to being the crazy one. I was always the one following the rules. I was always the one people pleasing. Mm-hmm. And so having Elizabeth here to provide that energy, I think is really important. And of course, there are going to be people who fall in between. And there's a spectrum of how we relate to ourselves and how we relate to the world.
Mm.
But I think, how cool is it? I just love the nature versus nurture conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because like mom and dad had four kids. We're all so different.
Yeah.
We all handle conflict differently. We all handle, you know, beautiful, joyous, abundant moments differently. We all express ourselves differently. But the four of us all have very similar limiting beliefs around big things, such as money or success or, I don't know, what else?
Self-worth.
Self-worth.
I feel like self-worth is at the core of so many. But most people that I talk to, and even having listened to some of your podcasts with guests in the past, I just feel like self-worth comes up in so many conversations.
Well, it's everything. Feeling worthy. Worth is a birthright, but we were taught that worth was earned. You know what I mean? So all of us relate to our worth in a different way. And I do think that there are people in this world who are like, I'm worthy. Yeah, of course I am. And when you look at those people, and maybe you start looking at what was their environment like in those first 7 years of their life?
Mm-hmm.
When their brain was just like literally a scribe taking in data and collecting evidence and like, just like, like, what does it mean to be worthy?
Maybe
they had parents, or maybe they had one primary caregiver in their life who was reinforcing, you're worthy of good things. And so they were like, okay, I'm going to apply this globally and timelessly. So this is why Elizabeth is doing this work with the youth of our generation to be like, what would happen if kids were born and immediately given the tools to feel confident and worthy, and the affirmations that they were hearing and the things that they were reading were all supportive of living a abundant, grateful, joyous, prosperous life.
Yeah. And I can think of so many people in my direct experience. Like my boyfriend, I would say he has really high self-worth, which sometimes is triggering as a motherfucker because like I struggle. But I'm like, oh, damn. Okay. You just had like super attentive caregivers and peers, parents that you were around and just like lived a very supportive life. And that's not knocking him or his family or his experience at all. If anything, like it made him who he is. He's so successful. He's so driven. Mm-hmm. He like doesn't have a shred of fucking self-doubt, when he's approaching anything new. And I mean, I look up to that. And that's something that I really want to begin to instill in the coming generation, like you said, because sometimes it won't happen in the home. So mm-hmm. where else can it happen? In school, being even mm-hmm. like your child's friends, like being around them, your friends' parents, things like yep. that. Like, you have more of an influence than you know. So that's why we all need to get on this work.
Yeah, absolutely. And so kind of where this conversation is going, we're nearing the end of like the science-y, the nitty-gritty, the factual of this episode. Number one, it's just this understanding, okay, the power of thought. What I think about is what I bring about. And where my attention goes is where energy is going to flow. So like, mm-hmm. what am I saying to myself? And what am I paying attention to? This goes hand in hand with what Elizabeth was just saying, because I was thinking about the dynamic or maybe the difference between like how Brett was raised versus how Casey was raised versus how we were raised mm-hmm. and some of my friends or my clients. And I'm like, okay, if I know their parents well enough, maybe the message was always the same, but the delivery may have been different. Mm-hmm. So if the message is you can do anything you want, one kid might get the message, you can do anything you want, while another kid might get the message, if you want something, you need to do these things to get it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So like, you can have anything, but you're going to have to work hard and you're going to have to be disciplined. And so like, I think for us, our dad is one of the hardest workers that I know. He's very Taurus, very earthly. He's sales, he's outgoing, he's personable, but like he grinds, he works, because when you're in sales, it's all like commission, right? So like, you can go as far as you want, but it's up to you to get there. And so I think maybe where Brett was raised, or I know for Casey, Casey's dad is one of the most optimistic, positive people I've ever met in my entire life. Like to the point where sometimes I'm like, that's toxic positivity and you are bypassing what needs to be seen and sat with. But that's a conversation for another day. But I remember meeting Casey and one of his mantras was like, it could be worse. Ooh, it could be worse, which sometimes is like, okay, thank you. That's a grounding thing to say. And then other times it's like completely invalidating what you're experiencing. So on one hand, Casey was always able to pick himself up by his bootstraps and be like, it could be worse. On the other hand, any time that he went through a rough patch or had really heavy, dark emotions, instead of allowing himself to feel it, to feel the hurt, the frustration, the overwhelm, the anger, the sadness, the grief, he would be like, it could be worse. I should just move on. I should just not sit with this. Mm-hmm. And so it serves him in some ways and completely fucking hinders him in others. And so it really does go to show what our parents say, but more so how they're saying it and what they're implying does end up becoming some of those core beliefs that we have. So maybe you're thinking of someone who like effortlessly goes after everything that they want in life. They're super confident. They don't struggle with imposter syndrome. They don't struggle with doubting themselves and their ability. They may very well have had parents who were just like, you're capable and you can do anything you want. Mm-hmm. Whereas our parents were always reinforcing that, but there was a lot more that went into those conversations of like, but here's all the ways that you could fuck yourself over, or here are all the ways that you could fail, or be careful. If you don't do this, you're gonna fail. Oh, so it's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. I also think that some, and not to get like too far into things, because I think this could get into a whole nother conversation, but I would wager that a lot of people who have high self-worth and high self-confidence and just like have that ability to be go-getters, maybe they had parents with like more of a financial cushion where they knew that like, even if I fuck up, even if I make a mistake, even if I fall flat on my face, they're going to help me and they're going to like hold me because like they got it, you know? And our parents worked hard for every dollar that they had, but I wouldn't say that they were like, go flit about and like do whatever you want, travel the world and like we'll foot the bill.
No.
It was like work fucking hard, build your fucking life, and it's on you. Like figure it out. Do something that you love. You know what I mean? We support you. We love you. We love like cheering you on. But like, you got this. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. I think on the flip side of that, like, yes, I agree. And I do see a lot of people who have that like effortless magnetism and confidence and who never doubt themselves. Like I look at their parents or I look at how they were raised and I'm like, well, maybe they never had to doubt or maybe they never had mm-hmm. to look at mm-hmm. the things the same way that, you know, me and you did. I also think there are those very unique souls who maybe grew up in a household that was very toxic or very traumatic. And those people who are like, I came from nothing and made everything for myself. Those are people who I believe came here to either on like a very specific soul contract journey for themselves, or they came here to like open up the awareness of the collective. Do you know what I mean? Like they're here yeah. with a little bit more of that like grit in that fire of, if I want something, I have to make it happen for myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it was almost like because they were given nothing, they yeah. developed this belief system of like, if I want it, I have to do it. And so then they just move through the world being like, it's me. It's me. Mm-hmm. I support me. I provide for me. And that desire for more than what they were given is so strong that they're able to achieve it. Now, I don't know. Are they achieving it out of love? Or are they achieving it out of fear?
Yeah.
Part of me thinks if someone's able to literally be born into nothing and it's very traumatic and they make something very powerful and successful for themselves, that it's out of love for their inner child. It's like, I'm doing yeah. it for little me. You know, yeah. I think that a lot of people who have those really big turnaround stories, it's like they were always doing it out of love for themselves.
It's funny because I can also think on the opposite side of that. Like I said, this could be its whole own episode,
mm-hmm.
but I can think of so many people who have scaled their businesses or have grinded in the corporate setting and they make the six figures. They have the bougie life. They have the nice handbags and they're fucking miserable, mm-hmm. but they thought that that's what they needed because they grew up with nothing. And now yeah. they're there and they're like, damn, like mm-hmm. that ain't it. So it's like it could go in so many different ways. It's wild.
So many ways. So yeah, taking us back into the content for this episode, week two of the Real With Method, I want to say before we're going to pivot and talking a little bit more of like the ego and the brain, and we're going to talk about the choose again method, some of the ways in which we can start reprogramming the mind and changing our thought patterns, creating new neural networks, which is how we change our life. But before we do that, I want to just really emphasize that we are not our thoughts, because that's where this conversation is heading. The thoughts come from the brain, which is the body. We are a soul that incarnates, our little spirit drops down into a vessel for this lifetime. But the brain is the body. Does that make sense? So like mm-hmm. all of these stories and all of these beliefs and all of this data, that's the physical world. That's the body. It's not who we are. We are not our beliefs. We are not our thoughts. We are not the neural networks. We are the awareness of all of these things. And yeah. so that's a huge piece of that spiritual awakening that gives you this sense of like reprieve. You're like, oh, okay, like, I'm not the one who fucked everything up. Like my soul isn't tainted. I'm not this horrible person who thinks all these things. It's really getting to this place where you can understand wherever you are, you feel like mentally, emotionally, spiritually, wherever you're at, I want to almost give you that permission slip to let yourself off the hook because your brain had a mission to keep you safe. And to keep you alive. And your brain was quite literally doing everything it needed to do to allow you to survive in your perceived environment. And we've talked a lot about, and we'll get into this even more throughout the Real With Method, but how our body perceives stress, right? How our brain perceives danger. All of that is like, in our DNA. It's like genetic. It's like we used to be hunters and gatherers, but now we're living in a world where no, we're not being chased by wild tigers and bears, and we're being shot at by, you know, people in other villages. What we perceive as dangerous is like not fitting in or not making enough money or not being pretty enough or not being likable or not, I don't know,
Yeah.
Having the newest iPhone. You know what I'm saying? So there's so much at play. So I don't want to use the phrase like, it's not your fault, but like, you know, do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not like you didn't wake up in the morning and go, I'm going to choose to believe all these things. It's conditioning. It was repetition over time from your parents, from your teachers, from your friends, from the school system that you grew up in, right? People who live in the middle of nowhere have a very different relationship to their surroundings than people who grew up in a city and what they deem as important based on day-to-day survival. It all looks different based on the environment that you were raised in. And the last thing I'm going to say about this before I pivot is your soul chose this. It chose this body. It chose those parents. It chose those circumstances. It chose that environment. And sometimes that's hard. It's hard to accept, right? Out of all the work that I've done for my own healing, I have to kind of center and ground myself and say, I chose this. I chose to live a life that reinforced this bad girl image, this bad girl energy. And one of my soul contracts, one of the reasons that I'm here is to overcome that belief and to be like, I am good and I am inherently worthy simply because I exist.
What's coming to mind for me as you're saying this is it's not our fault, but it is our responsibility to acknowledge that and to heal through that and to really overcome it. Like no one, you're not condemned by your past, but it is on you to be able to move through that and transmute that. I hate to use the word transmute because I feel like it's such a buzzword these days, but seriously, turning that experience into something positive, making that your superpower.
Turning your pain into poetry. You know what I mean? That's what we're here to do. Snaps. And I did just see a video that gave me mixed feelings, but the positive feelings it gave me are worth sharing. It was this woman talking about the inner work, and she was like, I'm not here to help the victims. I'm not here to help the women who are going to use their limiting beliefs as excuses. And she was being like very cut and dry about it, which can be triggering for a lot of people. I personally didn't feel triggered because I don't feel like I do that. But there have certainly been moments of time where I'm like, oh, that's just my ego. Like, that's just my limiting belief. Like, that's just my block. Like, that's just my childhood conditioning. And a lot of times we can fall into a victim mindset when we wake up and when we become aware of all of these belief systems that we have about ourselves that don't allow us to be our most free and vibrant and authentic selves.
Yeah.
Most of the belief systems that we have keep us stuck in fear, playing it small, and doubting our potential, right? And so think about how many of us self-sabotage our ability to be successful. And then it's very often in the spiritual world that we'll blame it on a limiting belief. We'll blame it on a block, you know? Like, well, I grew up with parents who, like, well, my money mindset is so bad because my parents did X, Y, and Z. And so that ties into what you were saying of like, once you gain this awareness, it's immediately your responsibility to do the work to evolve past it. You say transmute. I also think another buzzword that some people hate, I personally love, is to alchemize.
Yeah.
Right? Drop that fucking fear into your heart space and transmute it into love. Like you are a, I made a reel once and I was basically referring to the body as like an energetic filter. You can take anything in, but it's up to you what it's going to go back into the world as. You know, you can take in fear, but can you give the world, give back to the collective something more positive like love or hope or peace?
I think that in the book, When Things Fall Apart, they talk about this. It's a Buddhist principle. I want to say, and I could be wrong, I want to say it's called Tonglen or Tonglen, and it's doing exactly that. It's taking in the fear, the stress, the anxiety, the pain. You know, you're hearing about terrorism and wars and horrible fucking things, people dying. And you can take that in and you can feel that pain and you can send love and send prayers to those people that will actually make a difference in the collective energy. It's not just like, oh, sending love and light. It's like, no, no, no.
Yeah.
Feel the pain, feel the despair, feel the grief, and then make that into the love that you send. Like, put that energy back into the world as love.
Yeah. You have to feel it to heal it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to shift gears, not much, because it's all within the same realm of what we're talking about. But in order to move through this process of changing your thought patterns so that you can change your habits and you can change your beliefs and ultimately change your life, you have to have this awareness of the ego. So that's what I was getting at, is we are the soul. We are not the thoughts. The thoughts are coming from the brain, primarily from the ego. Now, the ego, as we're referring to it, there are many different ways it's referred to, you know, in psychology and whatnot. But basically, it's this idea that we have a small separated self that has a life and goal of its own to keep us separate and to keep us safe. So before we dive further into this, I'll kind of touch a little bit on my relationship to the idea of the ego. Because when I first had my spiritual awakening, it was like, my ego, that's the voice in my head that's like, you're a piece of shit. You're not smart. When I had an eating disorder, that was all my ego. It was all this, it was this false self that was like, I will only be okay if I'm skinny enough. So you need to work out. You need to eat this. You can't eat that. You need to look this way. You can't wear that. You need more makeup. You need this. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And when I got that awareness of like, oh my God, that voice in my head, that's so fucking cruel and so mean to me. Oh, that's my ego. And it's trying to keep me in fear and it's trying to keep me small. Okay, well, fuck you. Fuck you, ego. You know what I'm saying? So like my first introduction to the ego made the ego my enemy.
Yeah.
Which only creates further separation.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to really reiterate is that the ego is part of the brain and it's not here by accident. We have evolved in such a way where the ego used to, you know, keep us safe by talking about immediate danger. It's still keeping us, quote unquote, safe by talking about immediate danger. But what we perceive as dangerous has just shifted dramatically since the start of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it used to be, don't get eaten by a bear. And now it's, you didn't get enough likes on your Instagram.
Yeah. I feel like our definition of success and failure has shifted. And if our success definition or our failure definition, like if we're not meeting either of those, it just feels like we're in immediate peril. And then it's like, okay, we're being chased by a fucking tiger on an anatomical level or biological level.
Right. And so many of us who live in autopilot, and I think about myself until I had my spiritual awakening, I was living through the ego. The ego was everything. It was every thought. Every decision I made was from that thought. All of those thoughts were being produced from my limiting beliefs and my lack and my fear and from, you know, perceived danger in my environment and what have you. And so the ego talks primarily like you. It's saying you. You need to do this. You need to do that. You should be doing this. You shouldn't be doing that. Whereas the soul or the intuition, it speaks in like I am beautiful. I am worthy. This is what serves me, my highest good. And there's a beautiful way to describe ego versus intuition, how to know if those thoughts in your head are coming from the ego or if they're coming from your intuition. And we are going to get into that next week. We're going to dive way more into intuition, living in alignment with your soul, self-worth, all of the above. But to give you a good understanding of the ego, I, as a big sister, can attest, the ego is just giving off big sister energy. And so I'll explain the story that I've had to work through because I feel so terrible about it. But Elizabeth shared with me, I forget when it was, but like I didn't remember doing this to you. But apparently on the first day of sixth grade for Elizabeth, what year was I in then? Was I?
You were a sophomore in high school then?
So I'm a sophomore in high school.
So she's big shit. She's cool.
I walk into Elizabeth's room and I look at her outfit. Tell them what you were wearing.
I think I was wearing, oh, trigger. I think I was wearing my yellow Delia's t-shirt that had like a big graphic smiley face on it, except like it was winking and like the open eye was a heart. And it was just like, it was fucking cheesy. But like, I was a cheesy ass bitch. Like, I was just, that was who I was. And then most likely two different earrings, two different color flip-flops, and bright blue skinny jeans. So
they were teal.
They were teal. You can only imagine, I mean, even if if my younger self walked in wearing that right now to me, I'd be like, girl. But that's also because, like, that's literally a core, like, fabric of my being now is that conversation. So go ahead.
So I hate the color teal, especially when matched with yellow. I'll just throw that out there. So she's wearing teal skinny jeans and a yellow shirt and, like, pink and green flip-flops and guitar earrings and all these crazy things. And I walk into her bedroom and I look at her and I go, you cannot wear that. This is her first day of sixth grade. I go, you can't wear that. I'm telling her this thinking that I am going to protect her. This is me being the protective older sister saying, if you want to survive at that fucking school, if you want a chance of being cool, being accepted and being liked, you got to fucking change. So yeah. I think I'm doing her a solid.
Yeah.
But I'm guiding her through my lens of what is safe. Being unique and crazy with your style, it ain't safe, Liz. So leave it in elementary school. Like, do not carry that shit into middle school. And so for me, I'm like, that's also very much my personality is I'm very like, oh, do this, don't do that. Mm-hmm. I'm still like that now, but I use my intuition to guide me to give advice. Whereas before, it was all through my ego. It was all through my fear.
Yeah.
But so I'm like, I'm trying to help you. And Elizabeth's like, you just quite literally squashed my fire and my passion and my authenticity and my soul. And that conversation changed everything for you.
It changed everything because it changed the way that I spoke to myself about my style and about my expression. And I don't know if you said this already, but I know that you've described it to me this way in the past, is your ego can sound like you. It can sound like someone else. It can take the form of another person that, you know, you love and trust. And I love you. And I trusted the ever living shit out of you. That's why I was like, oh my God, you're right. You're right. I can't wear this. Why would I ever even... Like, that's so stupid. Why would I ever even have thought that was cute? You know, immediately I'm just like, no, you're so right. I will never do that again. And like, it wasn't even a second thought for me. I was just like, boom, done. That era of expression for me is gone. And for years to come, like even when I was in college and I was like dabbling with new styles, and by dabbling with new styles, I mean like going to the Forever 21 fucking clearance rack, I would still always like pick up a shirt or pick up something and be like, I would hear Emma's voice in my head being like, and I would just be like, all right, I can't get that one. Like, and that, like, I almost didn't even need to have my own intuition at that point because I was like, Emma's in my head and I trust her. So like, I would text you about like, what fucking Instagram filter should I use on this photo? Which like, who gives a fuck? But like, I gave such a big fuck because I was like, clearly, if I do the wrong one, the wrong anything, like I'm not going to be loved. And that's not to say that you were wrong, because I've done a lot of work around that experience too. And I know that for me, like if I had a little sister, or I think about, you know, my kids and my students, and when they're doing things that I feel might put them in a position of risk, or, you know, expose them to ridicule or being bullied and things like that, it's like, I need to let you know this because I need to prevent you from hearing those cruel words, because not everyone is as loving and accepting as your family.
Yeah. I have a client who, you know, she went through the Real With Project. And just as a reminder, I know we've talked about this many times. The Real With Method was born from the Real With Project. The Real With Project was the first ever group program that I made with all of these modules that's teaching all of these things. But I made the Real With Project when I was, what, like 25 years old? Mm-hmm. So the Real With Method now, I'm talking about it as a 30-year-old woman. It's definitely different. And that's why we're bringing it back. It's being like revived, but also it's coming through a different lens. I'm talking about these things in a very different way. But this is what is going to allow you to not just like feel inspired to make change, but actually feel like you have the ability to, because now you have all this knowledge and you have this awareness, you have the facts, you have the understanding. But as I was saying, one of my clients from the Real With Project, when she learned about the ego, I'll just never forget, like literally getting women into a room virtually And then being like, I had no fucking idea what an ego was. So you're telling me that that voice that literally bullies me all day, every day, I don't have to listen to it? I'm like, no, no, you don't have to listen to it. But one of my clients was like, it's my grandmother. It's the voice of my grandmother through and through every day being like, sit up straighter. Like a very old fashioned of like, you're a woman, proper etiquette, people pleasing, giving away her power, self-abandoning. That she was like, oh my fucking God. I had no idea that that voice was even the voice of my grandmother. It was like I knew, but I wasn't conscious. Mm-hmm. And so with this awareness, you can begin to take your power back, start living more intuitively, start living in alignment with your truth. And we quiet that ego. We do so in many ways. One of the reasons that that ego gets so loud is because we give it our power.
Yeah.
And because we believe it. And so I made a reel last year, or maybe 2 years ago. And I was just like sitting on my bed and I was like, you know, some people, even Casey sometimes will like question the work of like, is it really that big of a fucking deal? What you're thinking and this whole like ego thing and choosing again. And we'll get to the choose again piece. And I'm like, I have to remind myself and Casey, and I want to remind all of you that I had an eating disorder. I had a voice in my head telling me to restrict, binge, and purge, literally to make myself get sick.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the awareness to say, oh, that thought that's telling me to do those things, that probably isn't serving me. That doesn't actually sound like a good idea. That probably wouldn't feel good. I believed that thought, the thought that said, you need to work out 3 times today or else you'll be fat and disgusting and no one will love you. I was like, yes, ma'am, got it, on it. Like I gave all of my power to that voice and it was dark. Like my ego was so destructive and so toxic for so many years.
I feel the same way about mine. And because I also had the same restrict, binge, purge relationship with my body for a long time in high school and in college, which was obviously really difficult to move through. But once I began to heal from that, I also started, and this was before I even could recognize that it was ego, the voice in my head that was telling me to do these things was literally screaming, like shouting. And yep. I had this shouting in my internal dialogue, like ever since a child. And it would be telling me like, fucking clean your room, fold your like do these things to like be that perfect girl. And so it would literally be screeching at me. And I had this conversation with you a little while ago. I now can tell when my ego versus my intuition is speaking to me because my ego still shouts a little bit less loud, but still pretty aggressive. And my intuition is just like, do this.
Yep.
You got this. Like make this choice. Like, and it just, it's a whisper. It's a gentle, soft caress of my mind, like just being like, go in this way. So that's, I mean, that's, I don't know if that's for everybody, but really being able to pay attention to your internal dialogue around that, that helps a lot.
Yes, very much so. And that's everything that we're diving into next week is how to tell the difference between the intuition and the ego. How does your intuition speak to you? How can you connect to it? Because honestly, our intuition is like a muscle. And if you don't use it ever, it's going to be weak and you're not going to be able to flex it easily or trust it, right? Yeah. If you've never squatted in your life, you can't just like go grab a 300-pound dumbbell and squat it. Like you can't trust your body to be able to do that. Like it doesn't have the strength to be able to do that. And so you have to slowly work on your intuition. But again, we'll get into that next week. So now that you guys have this understanding that we have this ego, this false self that is trying to keep us safe by keeping us small, right? For my sister, I was like, play it cool, dude. Fit in for safety. It's that big sister energy. Now you can tap back into that mindful awareness and ask yourself, what am I thinking and how is it making me feel and where is it coming from? So we're going to get into 2 very simple ways that you can use the power of thought to start changing your life. And next week, again, more so talking about self-work, a little bit more spiritual, we have an entire week that we're going to be talking about manifestation and the practices you can do. So there's much more to come, but this is where I would like for you guys to start. It's keeping it very simple. The first thing is paying attention to how you speak. because the universe does not listen to words such as can't or don't. I think this is one of like the pillars of, you know, The Secret and thinking about the law of attraction.
Yep.
Saying things like, I can't wait. What's the primary word? What word holds the most weight in that sentence? It's wait. The word wait. So if you're always like, I can't wait for this, I can't wait for this, the universe doesn't hear can't. It hears wait, wait, wait. So it's like, oh, you want to wait? You'll wait a little bit longer. So there are other things that you can do to start shifting the way you speak and using the power of thought and intention to cast spells, right? Spelling matters. The words we use matters. So instead of saying things like, I can't wait until I'm living in my dream house, you can say things like, I'm so excited, right?
Or I'm so ready.
I'm so ready. And so not using words that you don't actually want to experience is very important. Can you think of another example of that? Because it's like slipping my mind.
Yeah, I was just thinking of something even just as simple as like when you're driving and you really don't want to hit a red light. It's like, don't want to hit a red light. Don't want to hit a red light. Instead of saying, I don't want to hit a red light, you're going to say, I want to hit green lights. I'm going to hit green lights. It's all green, 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 green. So talking about what you don't want, the word don't, like Emma said, it's just like, it ain't there. So it's, I want to hit red lights. I want them. Send them to me. Instead of focusing on the positive, it's the word affirmation obviously has a lot more depth to it than just affirming, but switching the dynamic of saying I don't want things and just looking at the opposite of it and then affirming that.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you brought that up because I can't believe my brain. I mean, this is probably pregnancy brain. Let's just all collectively blame it on my pregnancy brain that some of the things aren't flowing to me as seamlessly as they used to or they usually do. This is huge for athletes. And this is what Casey talks so much about is, so Casey, when he played football and what he does now is he'll work with the kick returner. So when the ball gets kicked so high in the air, that kid who's just standing in the middle of the field waiting to catch it and then has like 11 men charging at him full speed to tackle him,
right?
High pressure, high adrenaline, high risk. The thing that Casey has to teach the most is these kids' mindset. And what are you telling yourself? Are you saying, don't drop it, don't drop it, don't drop it, don't drop it, don't drop it? Or are you just saying, catch it, run? Like, you have to have that like mental discipline to speak what you want to happen. And so I remember me and Casey watching like the Michael Jordan documentary together, or we love sports documentaries. All of those people talk about the power of thought. They all talk about the law of attraction. They all talk about manifestation. Some of them come right out and say it like, oh, I manifest it. And some of them are a little bit more cryptic. They're like, oh, I just tell this to myself. I just make sure that I'm thinking positively. But like, you know that they know. Mm-hmm. If they're a pro athlete, they know, quote unquote, the secret. I feel like I didn't even touch on that. But the reason that the law of attraction is called the secret is because there's this story of how it was kept from us because that's where our power is. And if we believe that we have no power, if we believe that life is just constantly happening to us and we have no control, then we're easy to control.
Mm-hmm.
But when we step into our power, when we start practicing the power of thought, when we start putting our energy towards things that we want, we are magnetizing those desires to us. We're reclaiming our power. We're creating the futures that we want. And so the fact that this was very unspoken about, I mean, think of it. Like, I didn't hear about the law of attraction or manifestation until 2019.
Yeah.
And there were people who were already awake and aware of it, but it was a very small community. And then with the rise of TikTok and with Instagram, it was like, boom. That's a very actually cool way to look at the age of Aquarius and astrology and how Saturn has moved and like Pluto has moved and all of these planets that have big impact on collective energy. Like with the rise of technology, information is being spread like wildfire, which on one hand can be negative, but on the other hand, it can be really influential and really positive and can change the collective energy, because there are so many more people now who are like awake, conscious, aware. So That was the first thing, is be mindful of what you are saying, how you're saying it, and where you're allowing your attention to go. So Elizabeth's example was perfect. If you're driving down the highway or some road with like dozens of lights, instead of saying, don't hit a red light, don't hit a red light, you're just saying, green, 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 green lights. I love green lights. I see green lights. And you're focusing and saying what you want instead of saying what you don't want. It sounds so simple, but you would be surprised at how often we have been conditioned to just say what we don't want to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I hope it doesn't rain today. Or like, I hope, you know what I mean? It's like, just say, I want it to be sunny. Instead of saying, I don't want rain, say, I want sun. It's like very simple, but we have just kind of been conditioned into the more negative, fear-based way of thinking. So the second thing, because like, how are we able to attract what we want with our ego at play? How are we able to, you know, manifest what we want if we feel like we run anxious or if we have a lot of negative thoughts? This is the practice that changed everything for me. And I first learned this from Gabby Bernstein. So this is called the Choose Again Method. There are four very simple steps to the Choose Again Method. Number one, you are mindful and able to recognize when your ego is telling you some false story. So whether it's rooted in anxiety or fear or shame or guilt, or you know, you're pressuring yourself, you're feeling insecure, whatever it is. Number one, step one is recognize, become aware. Step number two, forgive the thought. Forgive it. Forgive the ego. Step three is thank the thought. Thank you. Thank you for showing me what I do not want. Because every time you show me what I don't want, you're also showing me what I do want.
Yeah.
Because the contrast, the duality is so potent in our way of thinking. And then step four, choose a better thought. Now, if you're wondering, why is this choose again method so important? How does it help me, you know, use the power of thought, use the law of attraction? We talked about this a little bit earlier, but positive thoughts have a way stronger vibration and frequency than negative thoughts. So if you're sitting there and you're having a really heavy, anxious spiral, maybe you're having a vulnerability hangover. Maybe you resonate with being like a content creator and you just like posted a picture or a video and now you're just like really starting to second guess. Like, are people going to judge me? Do I look stupid? Does it look like I'm trying hard? Is this cringe? Is this going to give people the ick? Those thoughts, while so negative, have a very low vibration. And there is something that you can refer to in your alignment guidebook called the emotional alignment scale, the emotional frequency scale. It's called many different things, but it's this picture that shows you that there are emotions that have a very low frequency. You'll see those on the bottom. That's the emotions like fear, guilt, shame, judgment, anger. But then as you start to look up that alignment scale, you'll start to see that there are emotions that are pretty high up, that have a pretty high frequency, that aren't so hard to reach. Those are emotions like boredom. Boredom is actually like a very powerful, neutral frequency to reside on, and we overlook it so much.
Yeah.
Another one we always overlook is contentment. Contentment has a very strong vibration. And then the one that I want to talk about the most is acceptance. Okay. And then at the very top of that, you know, emotional frequency scale, we have joy, love, freedom. Those have the strongest vibration. So the reason that the Choose Again method is so important is number one, because it's breaking that neural loop, that neural network from firing. It's preventing your thoughts from continuing to go down a path you don't want to become more deeply embedded. I'm such a visual person. I imagine your ego standing at the top of the mountain and like kicking a sled down like a anxious spiral path of the hill. And you like run down and you grab the sled and you throw it down the path of love. That's sometimes how it feels. It feels like you're chasing the thought. And then You go through the process, you recognize the thought, you forgive the thought, you thank the thought, but then you have to choose a better one. Now, this is where we've talked about affirmations definitely before. You can't say something that you don't believe because then your emotion, that frequency isn't going to change. So mm-hmm. just say, going back to my example before, you're having imposter syndrome. You're like, oh my God, I just posted something vulnerable. This is cringe. Instead of reaching for a new thought and making it the opposite of what you were just experiencing, instead of making it the opposite of the negative thought, like everyone loves this content. This content's amazing. You might not believe that. So don't say it because your feeling won't shift. The emotion within you won't shift. Going back to what I was saying about acceptance being actually so high up that emotional frequency scale, is you could literally say to yourself by choosing a new thought, I accept that I'm feeling insecure right now. I accept that this is really scary to be putting myself out there on the internet. Yeah. I accept myself anyways. Acceptance immediately ushers in the warmest, like surrender type energy. And I always say that acceptance is so underrated. And we overlook it, but it is such a powerful frequency for us to shift to. And it's the easiest one to reach for. You know what I'm saying? So if you're like having these thoughts that are built in and it's all fear, guilt, shame, don't go reach for joy. You're probably not going to get there. Yeah. But you can always reach for acceptance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that whole acceptance and forgiveness piece is so underrated. Nancy was literally just talking to me about this in my last session with her, because when feelings of like jealousy, hatred, resentment, all of those really negative and dense feelings come up, I'm just like, oh, like I hate feeling it. And she's like, you can hate feeling it, or yeah. you can accept that you're feeling that because you are, and you can forgive yourself for feeling that. Mm-hmm. Like that's a feeling you're experiencing. Hating it isn't going to fucking change. Like yeah. I'm feeling jealous or I'm feeling resentful. Okay, I accept that. And that is valid because that's my response to the situation. I don't need to like gaslight myself, but I can accept that and I can forgive that. And then in compassion and in grace, I can move on. And that is so incredibly powerful. People forget.
Yeah. I was actually going to save this for next week, but I'll say it very quickly and then we're wrapping up. I thought this was going to be an hour episode. We're definitely pushing an hour here. But one of the questions that is really, really powerful for anyone on this journey of changing their thoughts, recognizing limiting beliefs. For example, what Lizzie was talking about, you're feeling jealous and you hate yourself for that. That is something that I really struggle with. When I'm feeling jealous or when I feel triggered, I judge myself for feeling that way. And I stack negativity onto negativity. Instead of reaching for like, I love myself anyways, I'm like, I fucking hate myself for feeling this. A good question to determine what limiting belief, what story is this rooted in, is saying, okay, I feel jealous. And what am I allowing that to mean? What am I allowing that to mean? We'll really expand on this next week because it plays such a large role in self-worth. But for example, again, because I'm a content creator, I always use those as examples. But if I launch a masterclass and only one person signs up, what will I allow that to mean? Does it mean, like, where does my thoughts go? It means I'm not good enough. It means I shouldn't be doing this for, you know, whatever. That is a really great question to show you what's being triggered to make you feel that way, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, I'm feeling jealous. What does that mean? For me, I'm like, oh, I feel jealous. That means I'm a bad person. It really is rooted in my feeling of like, I'm bad. So when I feel jealous, I feel like a bad person. When I feel competitive, when I feel angry sometimes, I'm like, oh, this, yep, it's because I'm a bad person. Mm-hmm. I allow my feelings to mean things that don't fucking support me. So we'll dive more into that next week. You guys, next week is probably my favorite week, out of the entire Real With Method, because next week is all about self-worth. We're going to be talking way more about that, you know, emotional alignment scale, talking about our authentic self, inner child, the shadow work, intuition, and healing. Because now that we've talked about the power of thought, the law of attraction, the ego versus the soul, you can tap in from now until the next episode and you can start witnessing, okay, wow, my thoughts are primarily fear-based. This has to be my ego. It's yelling at me. It's talking in, what would you call it, third person, if it's saying you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is where, yeah, that's not my expertise, is anything with like the English language. My thoughts are primarily speaking in third person. This is where you get the opportunity to choose differently. The biggest key here is repetition.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll talk about the difference between micro healing and macro healing. The choose again method, that's micro healing. That's recognizing that it's the smallest choices and the smallest moments in our day that can create the biggest impact. So instead of going through your day on autopilot with all these really fear-based thoughts firing off left and right, you're mindful and you're like, wow, that thought didn't serve me. Let me choose a different one. Let me start maybe even being proactive. Let me start setting intentions before I do things. Let me start ritualizing some of the things that I do during my day. For any of you who joined us in the 3-day challenge, hopefully you're already feeling connected to that powerful action-taking part of yourself who's like, fuck it. I'm going to do my skincare out of love for myself. I'm going to make myself a meal because I deserve to be nourished. I'm going to go work out because my body deserves to feel good. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z out of love instead of out of fear. That's basically the choose again method. And again, I learned the choose again method from Gabby Bernstein. I forget what book it is that she talks about it. It's either Super Attractor or The Universe Has Your Back, but I like to listen to Gabby's books on Audible. It's my favorite way to take in her energy and her information. And she's definitely not for everybody, but she was a huge influence in my life during my first spiritual awakening back in like 2019, 2020.
I've never read her books, actually. I don't know why, but I should.
I'm like shocked because I feel like anytime that I like something, I literally shove it down your throat.
Yeah, no, those are the only books. I think I have The Universe. I have Spirit Junkie. I'm looking at it. I have it. I've never read it, though. I don't know why.
I actually haven't read Spirit Junkie, but her other books. Yeah.
I guess I have some homework then.
You have some homework. So with that being said, we are going to wrap up week 2 of The Real With Method. I hope that this episode, I don't even know what I hope this episode made you feel. Maybe you felt a lot of things, but if anything that you can take away from this, it's that you are not your thoughts. You're the awareness of your thoughts, and you always have the power to choose again, to choose differently. And when you start taking those micro moments of your day and you're shifting them to be supportive, to be loving, and to be nourishing, you will start to see. For some people, it's immediate. For some people, it's like a day, 2 days, 3 days, which is why we run the 3-day challenge. For other people, it might take a little bit longer. But typically speaking, you move through a whole day taking action out of love, your energy is going to be shifting. You're going to feel more magnetic. And it's not because you're like walking through your day saying, I'm abundant, I'm beautiful, I'm healthy, I'm amazing. It's because you are reinforcing your worth by treating yourself like you're worthy. And I know that sounds so simple, and we're going to expand on that next week. So with that being said, thank you for joining us. We're only 2 weeks in. We've already covered a lot here. So take your time with this week's episode if you have to listen to it in maybe a few different parts. I feel you. I know that this was longer than we had anticipated, but as you can tell, there's so much that goes into this.
Mm-hmm. This was all such good information. And even having kind of on some level known some of this, I still feel like I've learned so much, and I definitely have some reflecting to do. So looking forward to next week, though.
Yeah. So we will see you guys next week. Do not forget to look at your alignment guidebook. There are some opportunities in there for you to do some reflection, some cute little assignments for you to integrate the information that you heard on today's episode. And with that being said, I hope this found you in a beautiful place, and we will catch you next time.